while there are aspects of Stoicism that are true and good, like the four cardinal virtues, for example, or the idea of bringing one's body under the mastery of the soul, a good thing with the wrong aim or goal ultimately misses the mark. And I think that's the problem with Stoicism macrocosmically in general, that it's aimed incorrectly.
Magnificat is excited to introduce Magnifier, a new bi-monthly magazine for children ages 7 to 12, filled with wholesome offline entertainment that will awaken their sense of wonder to what is good and beautiful around them. Each issue focuses on one theme, approaching it from different angles. Comics, stories, interviews with artisans, crafts, and art encourage children to appreciate creation and dream about what they can accomplish with their talents. Check it out for yourself at magnifiermagazine.com.
Hey, thanks for joining us today on our Reason for Hope. I just found out the other day from one of our producers that, you know, more than half the people that watch this show, this podcast, do not subscribe to us. This is insane. I mean, what are you waiting for? Hit the subscribe button now. All right, back to the show.
Everybody, welcome back to A Reason for Hope. I'm Jack. I'm here with our director of theology, Dr. David Hyduck, once again. And in this episode, we're going to look at a very ancient philosophy that has made somewhat of a comeback in maybe the past decade or so. It's called Stoicism. With current generations experiencing more anxiety, stress, and depression than previous ones, and with a culture that's relinquished traditional values to a major degree and religious belief, young adults today are straining to find a way to make sense of this crazy world we live in and discover a way to find calm and even joy in the storm. So we know contemporary social media influencers like Ryan Holiday are offering Stoicism as the path. Not a path, but the path, right? Believing that this ancient philosophy can act as a kind of self-help program for modern man, a roadmap to help people find success and live their fullest life. For example, Dave, earlier before we started recording, had compared Ryan Holiday to someone like a Stephen Covey from the 90s, right? Seven Habits of Highly Successful People.
Effective.
People, yeah. Oh, that sounds better. But will it work? Will Stoicism work? What exactly is Stoicism? What can it offer? What are its drawbacks and limits? Is it compatible with a Christian worldview? That's what we're going to discuss today. So let's dive into it. Dave, welcome.
Good to see you, Jack.
You too, as always. So Dave, I know you did a lot of research for this. What is Stoicism? Let's start with that.
Okay, so Stoicism originated as a Hellenistic philosophy, so it's Greek philosophy. Founded in Athens by Zeno. The name Stoicism comes from the Stoa Poikil, which was a painted porch or open market in Athens where the original Stoics would meet and teach and talk. Stoicism moved to Rome and it flourished there, either being openly embraced by emperors or persecuted by emperors, depending on who the emperor was. So obviously, one of the most famous Stoics in history was the Roman Emperor Marcus Aurelius, and we'll talk a little bit about him in a little bit. But so Stoicism very much was a philosophy that was focused on everyday living. So it's a practical philosophy. It focused on ethics, understood more broadly on just how one should live one's life, not just necessarily on moral questions particularly, but more broadly, how should you live? And this informed the Stoics' idea of what they called physics, nowadays natural science or metaphysics, and also what they called logic, which was like modern logic, epistemology, philosophy of language, cognitive science. So these three, ethics being the primary, with physics and logic being connected, make up what are called the three topoi of Stoicism. And we'll talk a little bit about that too in a little bit.
Are we going to talk about how Stoicism and the focus on ethics and everyday living informed that?
Well,
that's very interesting.
Actually, it's their view of physics and logic that are that's supposed to inform how one lives.
Very interesting.
So they had a very strong sense that there was no distinction between is and ought, looking at the natural world and applying and the inherent rationality in the natural world would give you how you should live.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So,
Sounds good on the surface.
And topoi is like, basically means places. These are the places where the Stoic will find the truth about how to live.
Interesting. You see?
So the first Stoic, as I mentioned, was Zeno. And he was a merchant businessman who lost everything in a shipwreck and then came to Athens and found philosophy, which is sort of interesting. The whole philosophy was like built as a way to respond to the fact that Zeno had lost everything, right?
So did he founded philosophy?
Well, no, he founded Stoicism.
Oh, he founded Stoicism.
Right. Okay. So Stoicism as a philosophy was built, you could say,
to address issues.
The challenge of how do you live when you've lost it all kind of idea.
Sure.
So you could see why Stoicism is often associated with a philosophy that helps you to overcome challenges and obstacles, or rather to see the challenges and obstacles as the way to a more full actualization and true happiness. Then you had the Emperor Marcus Aurelius, who I mentioned before. He wrote probably the most famous book on Stoicism called Meditations. Then you had the Roman statesman and playwright, dramatist Seneca, as well as the slave Epictetus, who is also to some degree his teacher, Musonius Rufus. So these are the main figures in ancient Stoicism and the ones that we sort of look to when we're looking at what does Stoic philosophy put forth as principles for how you should live and what is considered to be the right way to live, to accomplish success.
Do some people mistakenly credit Marcus Aurelius as being the founder of Stoicism? Because I thought he was, and then all of a sudden I'm seeing Zeno here.
Yeah, Zeno is actually the founder.
Okay, cool.
So
cool.
I think the reason why Marcus Aurelius gets almost like personified as Stoicism. He was the Roman emperor, so he had a great reach. He sort of models what in the ancient world was considered to be the philosopher king.
Okay.
You know, and obviously his meditations being so well read, right?
Okay, so what are the main tenets of Stoicism? Do they have to do with the what was the T word?
Yeah, the topoi.
Are they the topoi essentially? Are those the tenets?
Yes, those are the main places where the Stoic goes to find the answers on how to live. So, logic and physics are related to ethics in Stoicism. Because Stoicism at bottom is a naturalistic philosophy. So that's one of the things that we're going to have to bring up later on when we talk about its compatibility with Christianity, is that from the onset, it's not a supernatural philosophy. It is a naturalistic philosophy. So basically, it looks to the world and what we find in the world to give us some sort of idea or inclination as to how we should be living. Now there can be a compatibility between Christianity and this, and when we get to those more specifically, we can talk about that, how there is an idea, for example, of natural law in Christian thinking.
Yeah.
So,
but that natural law is the law written on our hearts from a Christian perspective, right?
That God has built into the nature of things.
What we ought to
do.
Yeah.
Not just sort of speak a part of how the universe is because somehow the universe has some sort of inherent rationality of its own, you see? And so that was definitely an idea that many of the Stoics had, that there was this logos, and what they would do sometimes is identify this logos as whatever that is that makes the world inherently rational. So the world's sort of built-in rationality is this logos. But because there's an inherent rationality, it's intelligible. And so you can get to answers about how to live by reflecting on how things work in the world. And so this
from
was
an
very
empirical,
much, from an empirical point
standpoint.
Of view.
Right. Okay.
So this is very much a Stoic approach.
And would they consider, this might be coming off the topic here, and feel free to say, we can talk about this later. Do they consider psychology to be natural as well?
Well, the Stoics themselves wouldn't have had a concept of modern psychology.
Okay.
But yes, yeah, so like they would look at that as one of the places or topoi that you would go to find truth. A modern Stoic would look to the empirical evidence of modern psychology, evolutionary biology, these sorts of things they look to. In fact, Ryan Holiday brings this stuff up frequently in his own writing and speaking and podcasting. But there's also in Stoicism, basically Stoicism is geared around, because it's an ethics-based philosophy, it's practical, how should I live? The Stoics can't get away from the tradition of Greek philosophy. So the idea of the virtues as being the predominant way to move forward with regards to how one can live a good life is very present in the Stoics. And this is admirable. In fact, four virtues that you're going to probably see are very well known to us in the Christian world are the virtues of prudence and justice and temperance and fortitude, which we call the cardinal or moral virtues. So these were the four main virtues that the Stoics focused on. I find that to be interesting, and it's good, you know, but I find it to be interesting in and of itself, because obviously Christians would add that there's faith, hope, and charity as well, the theological virtues, which are really key, I think, and a key difference between the idea of Stoicism and Christianity that we can get into later on. So again, you got these three places, the idea of I'm looking to the natural world, I'm looking at physics, I'm applying like philosophy, I'm kind of exploiting the inherent rationality of things in order to figure out how I should live. And I'm moving from these virtues of wisdom, justice, temperance, courage. I'm moving from those to a approach how I'm going to live my life. And by the way, it's interesting because the Stoics, again, coming from Zeno, are always interested in the question of, like, how do I respond to the circumstances that I find in my life that I cannot control? And I think this is probably one of the reasons why it's so popular today, is that there's a lot going on in the world that people feel like maybe they can't control. So this comes to, like, speaking a little bit about Ryan Holiday. Ryan Holiday is probably the most popular promoter of Stoicism. He's written multiple best-selling books. He runs the Daily Stoic. And to give you an idea of how popular this is, his website indicates that they have 150 million podcast downloads, 750,000 email subscribers, 1.5 million YouTube subscribers, 2.7 million Instagram subscribers. But these last two numbers aren't up to date on the website, because I checked and it seems like he has almost 2 million YouTube subscribers and almost 3.5 million yeah. Instagram followers. So, he's really turned Stoicism into a incredibly popular thing, but there's some fire he's ignited, or there's something that he's brought up that has really attracted people. And yet he's managed to turn it into, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way, into kind of like a self-help business. And like you mentioned, kind of akin to what Stephen Covey did. Stephen Covey in the 90s with the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People believed that there were what he called natural laws, that if we lived by these natural laws,
he did believe that,
you know, yeah. that That's then true. We would have our fullest life.
Yeah.
And then he set up his habits as being these natural laws.
Yeah.
And so I think Ryan Holiday is doing something similar, where he recognizes what Stoicism offers is sort of like these principles that guide us, that are just, if I could say it, although I don't think he would call them, because I think he shies away from this word, truths that can govern our behavior. And yet, he's kind of pushed that forward. So he's got these books. You can sign up for your Daily Stoic Starter Pack. you know, like on his website.
It almost
all that
sounds
sort of, he's
like
got his podcast and everything else. So.
It does it borderline on prosperity gospel type? Does it borderline into that category? Not that they're preaching the gospel, but you know what I'm saying? Like if I live out these truths or these rules or these natural laws, then I will prosper materially. Is that kind of what they're getting at? Or is it, because obviously with Christianity, it's like, you know, you're called to carry your cross.
Right. We can get into that because okay. I think that one of the things that's a little different is going to be that for the Stoic, or at least in the way that Ryan Holiday is putting it forth, what is a cross? Because for him, he would say, based on his reading of the Stoics, that situations are neither good nor bad, that it's our perception of them that makes them good or bad. And so a situation is either good or bad, whether depending on how we see it. And so the real thing to take control of is our perception, and that we can start to see things that we see as obstacles as the actual way to accomplish even greater things.
Sure, there's something to be said for that, but like, is he throwing out good and evil?
That's the question.
Yeah, okay.
So we can talk more about that, I think, in a little bit. But let me give you this definition that he gives of Stoicism. I grabbed it off of a definition he gave online in a YouTube short. Stoicism, if I had to summarize in one sentence, I would say it's the idea that we don't control what happens to us in life, but we control how we respond to what happens to us in life. And as a little aside, Stephen Covey said very much a similar thing in the 1990s, when he said, between stimulus and response is this place called free will, that we can choose our response to a given stimulus, that we don't have to react.
Yeah.
So that's not really much different than
what Covey was saying.
Yeah. So continuing the quote, and the Stoics say that basically every situation, big ones, small ones, ones you wanted, ones you didn't want, it's all an opportunity to respond with these four virtues. And the virtues are courage, discipline, justice, and wisdom. So the idea is that what life is asking from you is one or all of those virtues in some kind of combination. That's what it's demanding of you. So that's how Ryan Holiday goes about defining Stoicism. And you can see, therefore, why it's popular. People are interested in how can I respond to things that I can't control? And how can I actually not only respond, but thrive and grow and become even more all that I can be because of it, seeing it as an opportunity, as a way to that, as opposed to something to get past or over, you see, to get through instead of over.
Yeah.
You see? So now, as a result of this kind of idea of being in complete control of how I respond to the situations in my life, Stoicism can come across in some people's mind as a sort of like cold emotionlessness. That's not exactly true, but it is true, because apathy is a value, not a sense of I don't feel anything, but a sense of my feelings do not define me or dictate my choices.
It's almost and kind so, of Buddhist in a way.
It can sound like that, like
get,
almost
get
like
rid
a
of
Zen
all emotion,
Buddhism.
Get rid of all desire.
Right. This kind of thing can be part of what Stoicism gives the impression of saying, that we can change our perception of it all, you know, that we're not controlled by situations, we're not controlled by our feelings, but rather we are in control of all of it. And the obstacle, again, isn't in the way, it is the way. And that's actually... The Obstacle is the Way is one of his famous books, Ryan Holiday's famous book.
Oh, okay.
So for what it's worth, that's a kind of summary of Stoicism, I think.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, obviously, I think probably a lot of our audience listeners are seeing a lot of parallels to Christianity here, as am I. So, you know, especially with the virtues, the talk of the virtues, and this talk of free will, going through the obstacle rather than around it, avoiding it, over it, kind of sounds like carrying your cross.
Mm-hmm.
So in what ways is Stoicism compatible with Christianity?
Well, you already mentioned the four cardinal virtues are big.
Okay.
And this comes from prior to Zeno in Greek philosophy. Aristotle talked about the virtuous life as being the good life, as the way to what was called eudaimonic happiness, this sense of fulfillment, not just a passing happiness or a sense level happiness, but something deep.
Like joy?
Something more akin to joy.
Okay.
A sense of contentment, maybe better said. Because you could have bursts of joy, but I think contentment is that sense of like evenness, like a peacefulness, right? So you've got that. And those are, of course, cardinal virtues that are a big part of like Catholic tradition. You've got the idea of disciplining your body, which is a really important idea. This concept that again, I'm going to do the hard thing. So Seneca wrote, we treat the body rigorously so that it will not be disobedient to the mind. So there's an instinct in Stoicism of a proper ordering of powers within the human person, that somehow the mind, the intellect, the will is supposed to govern the body and not vice versa. That disciplining the body is ultimately a good exercise for ourselves, because it is placing, you know, the mind in charge, which is where it should be. So this is good.
It's kind of like soul over body.
Oh, right. The soul is the form of the body. The soul is supposed to direct the body, you know, accordingly.
As was before original sin.
Exactly.
The fall.
So like that very much is an instinct in Stoicism, which is a good instinct. I mentioned there's a hint of natural law idea in Stoicism. This idea that by reflecting on the nature of things, we can see a proper way to act and live in the world. Of course, this is a little bit different in a Christian worldview. The Stoics didn't have this idea necessarily that there was a creator that built everything in the universe for particular ends or purposes, and that's why they're directed towards those purposes.
Then what's the logos then?
Well, the logos was an inherent rationality. It wasn't necessarily a personal God in Stoicism or in Greek philosophy more generally. Some Greek philosophers believed the logos was a demiurge, but others just believed it to be sort of like a principle of rationality in the universe. So I think that contemporary Stoics tend to see that latter
Rationality presupposes an intellect, right?
Well, that's okay. Yes. So this is one of those things.
We can get to this.
This
later.
Is one of the ways in which there's going to be a slight problem.
Yeah.
Because the idea of a logos isn't a problem. The idea of there being a rationality without a reason,
right,
is a problem. Like, but back to the idea of the natural law for a moment. Okay. There, Epictetus's teacher, mentor, Rufus, supposedly was vehemently anti-abortion, anti-contraception. He believed that like families should be large families, that couples should have a lot of children. It's interesting when you look at that, that sounds very much like how Catholics believe, right?
And the Christian before the 1930s.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So now that's interesting, but why is that? Because he's reflecting on the world. He is accepting that if there's an inherent rationality to things, that part of that is sex has an inherent rationality, that it's ordered to a particular end. And what is the particular end that it's ordered to? And therefore, what would marriage be about? Like, you know, he's kind of looking all of that by looking at the world. It's not called natural law per se, but there's an example of a Stoic thinking in a way that you could say, well, gee, that sounds very familiar to me.
Yeah.
You know, in our own kind of concept of natural law. You mentioned the logos. Like there was this idea of an inherent rationality to the universe that orders it, but there was no uniform religious creed. So like it was, like I mentioned, some philosophers thought the logos was an actual demiurge, but not necessarily personal.
What's a demiurge?
Sort of like a mini god, a demigod,
okay.
You know, Moana. Okay. Just kidding. So this sort of idea
tattoos
that
are going to start moving.
Yeah.
Jimmy's tattoos are moving.
So you get it. Like, so that's sort of it. It's not like, you know, a god of all gods. But there's no sense of like the Logos being an actual person, which is what you see in Christianity, where the Logos is the word spoken by the Father.
That's the etymology of Logos, right? It means word.
It means word, right? But it really also means reason, which is why we get logic.
You need reason to be able to speak.
Well, one could also argue that without some sense of words, whether or not one could reason. So this is why this is why you only see,
like, how do we think?
Communication is different than language. So, like, for example, for human persons, one of the things that, like, people say, oh, well, we're just like chimpanzees. They communicate, they express emotion. Yes, but they don't have language. Well, they communicate with each other, but they don't have language, which means they don't have concepts, which means they don't have definitions, which means they don't have a sense that, like, if this and that, then this other thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Except in their experiential kind of way. Like, you know, like when I build this, this happens.
Yeah, when the bell rings, then I salivate.
So it's, in that sense, it's more of like a clear response to a stimulus that has become programmed in them than it is like a reasoning from premises to conclusion, you know? In order to do that, you do need language. So I think that that's a pretty important thing you bring up.
Are you looking for a comfortable brown scapular that won't break? Check out our sponsor, Scapulars.com. They use American-made paracord, so it's super strong. And they also use Australian merino wool, so it's super comfortable. It feels like you're getting a warm hug from your heavenly mother. Click on the link above or below in the description and get yourself the most durable, comfortable scapulars in the world. Hello, and thanks for being with us here on A Reason for Hope podcast. Been very grateful of the many years that we've been doing this for you. This is our sixth season with hundreds of podcasts already released. Although they're free to watch and listen to, they're not free to produce. So I'm asking that you discern to contributing and donate to A Reason for Hope podcast. We're a nonprofit organization. Every dollar, every penny is tax deductible. All you have to do is go to our website and click donation and navigate the podcast. All the funds that you donate will go to the production of this podcast. Thanks again, and may God bless you.
Some more things about Stoicism, right? That, like, so they want to talk about suffering and how to overcome, or rather how to see suffering as a positive, as something that has meaning. The obstacle is the way, but the way to a greater perfection or fulfillment through the exercise of virtue, right? So this is a step in the right direction, right? Suffering is not meaningless. We can't control the things that happen to us, but we can, in a sense, choose our response to them and find meaning in them and actually see them as a way to something greater, something more, something higher. So this is definitely an idea that comes from the Stoics. Of course, it's going to be different than what suffering is for the Christian. Although some of that we can find it analogously true of how Christians view suffering, it's also going to be different. And then the other thing that I think is interesting about Stoicism, that is actually a relationship it has with Christianity, is that guys like Ryan Holiday bill it as like a philosophy for everyone. They emphasize the fact that Zeno was a businessman, that Marcus Aurelius was an emperor, that Seneca was a statesman and a playwright, and that Epictetus was a slave. So, like, on some level, this philosophy works for everyone, no matter what state they're in life. And if it's an interesting thing to think about, in the early church, one of the reasons that Christianity spread so quickly was because it too was seen as a religion that appealed to everyone. I mean, think about what St. Paul says: Gentile or Jew, slave or free man, woman or man, no more, one body in Christ, right? So there's this idea that the guy who runs the country is not more in Jesus Christ than the slave. And in fact, when Paul is addressing masters with regards to their slaves, he encourages them to see that while there's a certain hierarchy, that the slave is to regard the master and the master, the slave, as brothers.
It's almost like the hierarchy is part of the physics or the logic of the natural universe, but the regarding someone who is in a different status, if you will, as a brother, as equal, is supernatural.
Right. And so in that sense, you can see Christianity seems to, I wouldn't say it levels all hierarchies because the church is hierarchical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it makes a recognition of the equal dignity of everyone and also the equal lovability of everyone, and that God loves everyone and died for everyone, whether a master, a slave, in the case, whether an emperor, a senator, a slave, or a businessman, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And in the early church, you had very wealthy people who were Christians, and you can find that in the letters of St. Paul. They supported his ministry and helped him do his ministry. Yeah. But there's also slaves and the poor and everybody else who are also Christian. Mm-hmm. And this actually leads to some interesting challenges in the early church, because you have in the letter of James, where it seems that some were focused on how they dressed at worship and what kind of things and they were wearing, and the sort of people who could pay them regard or kind of do them favors versus the poor who were being forgotten. And St. James rails on that situation, that inequality, that lack of discerning the brother who is of a different class than you. You know, like, so that was something that was a big deal, you know, in the early church to be focused on as something to get rid of. Not necessarily that you got rid of hierarchies in the world, you know, but that the way in which you regarded your brother changed. So like, even as a dad, like I have an authority over my children, right? But my children are baptized, so they're my brothers and sisters in Christ. And so that impacts now the way I exercise my authority, right? So I still have authority.
Yeah, yeah.
But my authority is for service, and the ones who I am guiding are my brothers.
Yeah, yeah. Those are very important distinctions. Thank you for that. That's super helpful. Let's get into the ways Stoicism differs from Christianity. So how would you respond to that?
Okay, so I think we can think of it like macrocosmically and microcosmically. While there are aspects of Stoicism that are true and good, like the four cardinal virtues, for example, or the idea of bringing one's body under the mastery of the soul, a good thing with the wrong aim or goal ultimately misses the mark. Mm. And I think that's the problem with Stoicism macrocosmically in general, that it's aimed incorrectly. Take the four virtues, for example. It is true that the virtuous life is the life that will lead to eudaimonic happiness. You know, this is not a new idea. Aristotle said this, that the life of virtue is what constitutes happiness, and the lack of virtue is going to lead to the reverse of happiness. But St. Thomas Aquinas picks this up, and this is what St. Thomas Aquinas says in the Summa. It is impossible for any created good to constitute man's happiness, for happiness is the perfect good, which lulls the appetite altogether. Else it would not be the last end, if something yet remained to be desired. Now the object of the will, that is of man's appetite, is the universal good, just as the object of the intellect is the universal true. Hence it is evident that naught can lull man's will save the universal good. This is to be found not in any creature, but in God alone, because every creature has goodness by participation. Wherefore, God alone can satisfy the will of man, according to the words of Psalm 102:5, who satisfieth thy desire with good things. Therefore, God alone constitutes man's happiness. So, in other words, virtue is really just a created good. Virtues are good because they participate in some perfection of God, who is goodness itself, right? So, so the pursuit of virtue by itself misses the aim, right? Which is that the real desire is God, not a particular virtue.
Yeah, yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
Now, we could kind of riff on this a little bit. We know that in our Christian and even in Jewish perspective, human beings are created in the image and likeness of God. This is our true nature. If somebody were to say, what are you? You know, you're the image and likeness of God. That's what it means to be a human being. To the degree that we fall short of this, we are falling short of what we are and are called to be, right? So St. Gregory of Nyssa said that the goal of the virtuous life is to be like God. So in other words, the more virtuous we are, the more fully or perfectly human we are, the more an image and likeness of God we are, right? And thus, the more we are fulfilling what we were created to be. Okay? So the frame of reference for the Stoic in the pursuit of perfection, right? Or in the sense of fulfillment as a human being is a little askew, because it's not about fulfilling our being as an image of God. It's not like that. That the real aim is to be something in a sense higher than a natural good. You see,
yeah,
because we're created for something higher,
right?
Or
right.
As we have a dignity that is higher.
Mm.
Right. And this is sort of interesting in the sense that like the only virtues that Stoics tend to focus on are the moral virtues, which to some degree are achievable by human will, versus the theological virtues, which are not. Mm. Right. Mm. So like in a related point to this, I think if we thought about the ultimate goal or aim of the Christian life, it's to know, love, and serve God. Right? So we can be happy with him forever in the next world.
Life. Yeah.
So all of our pursuits, whether it be our pursuit of virtue or the acceptance of suffering and the trials that God wills for us, is really about knowing, loving, and serving God. So we want to be good because God is good and because he calls us to be good, and we want to love him. We want to do what he wants. We want to please him. So for the Christian, being virtuous is not about some kind of self-actualization for its own sake. It's like the motive is not, I'm going to be my best me for me, yeah. Right? It's, I'm going to be what God created me to be. I want to be all that God is asking of me. I want to accept what God is asking of me. I want to pursue virtue because that's what God wants of me. And yes, that winds up being self-actualizing, right. You know, like, but the aim isn't self-actualization in a sense. Okay. So now this is an interesting little add-on to that. St. John says that we can't love God who we don't see if we don't love our brother who we do see. So
yeah,
in a nutshell, self-emptying, sacrificial, self-forgetful love is the ultimate virtue, since God is love. Every other virtue makes us better lovers, right? So holiness, which is called the perfection of charity, is something we're striving for, but it's because we're called to love God and our neighbor as ourself. That's what makes us holy. And the irony of that is I can't love God and love my neighbor as myself for me, so that I'm perfect and better and holy. I'm loving God, I'm loving my neighbor as myself. I'm loving God for God's sake, you know, in gratefulness. I'm loving my neighbor for my neighbor's sake, in sacrificial love for their good. And it's that self-forgetfulness that brings about the self-actualization. But somehow you shoot yourself in the foot if I'm trying to self-actualize as my aim.
Yeah.
Right? And so in this sense, Stoicism, I think, misses the mark as well, because self-actualization and an earthly actualization is the aim. It's not ultimately being with God for all eternity in heaven. It's not ultimately the love of God and love of neighbor for the love of God that's the motivation.
Right.
It's not, it's missing.
For me, the way to sort of condense that and summarize it in just a sentence is that Stoicism is aimed at something and Christianity is aimed at someone other than the self.
Right.
And so, Stoicism might be aimed at someone, but you're ultimately, like you're saying, aiming at yourself. And then Christianity aims at someone else, God, neighbor. And then, like you said, it ultimately becomes self-actualizing, but in a selfless way. So,
And the cross, you know, in the terms of suffering, even like for God and for neighbor, the cross is still the cross.
Yeah.
Jesus despised the shame of the cross, right?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say that the cross was actually a good thing.
Yeah.
But the evil of the cross is transformed, right? But you're still acknowledging it's an evil.
Stoicism would just be like, oh, you know, if only you were enlightened,
you would see that this is actually good as well. Right, exactly.
Interesting.
So there's a difference there. And also in Christianity, the idea of even suffering is redemptive. It's through the cross that Jesus saves, right? And so the Christian now has this sense that suffering has meaning. The suffering that we choose for ourselves, like mortifications, penances, and the sufferings that God wills for us by allowing evil to befall us, all of that can be attached to the suffering of Jesus, joined to the suffering of Jesus on the cross. And thereby, we can contribute to the redemption of the world, our own souls and the souls of others through that suffering. So I think that this is an important point that, and what does suffering do? It teaches us detachment from the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like that's a good thing. Ultimately that we yearn for heaven, that we're not attached to this world. And yet it almost seems like the Stoics' aim is the best possible life here and now, instead of recognizing that this world is passing away. What does Jesus say? What good is it to gain the whole world and lose your soul? Right, there's a sort of element there that's missed again by the Stoics. That
it's like an old-fashioned missing a maraschino cherry.
Okay, yeah, it's kind of missing.
Missing the cherry.
That's
on
the
top.
Punchline,
right?
You know,
yeah. Stoicism.
That's right. So that, and the way that the thing that actually gives meaning and informs what the purpose is, that detachment from the world, is ultimately where you're going to find your fulfillment, that you're living for eternity. And the Christian would say, when you're detached from the world, you actually learn to really appreciate and use the things of the world for their proper purpose, which was what? To get you to heaven. Like every created good is only a good insofar as it's supposed to lead you to heaven.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Those are some things that I would say, you know, like, but that being said, I think maybe one more important point is that Stoicism to me resembles sort of like the Pelagian heresy that said that, you know, you could, in a sense, will your own salvation, that if you just worked hard enough, you could keep the commandments, you could, you know, live out all the virtues, you could be holy just by your own efforts. And that was condemned because we can't, we need grace.
Okay.
And so, again, the three theological virtues here that are infused virtues that only happen as a result of baptism, right? Those are missed, right? Charity being that ultimate one, which is the virtue of all virtues. We're saying it's that charity is not possible without grace. To live the life of the Christian is not possible without grace. Jesus says, apart from me, you could do nothing. He says, for man, it's impossible. With God, all things are possible. So my concern about Stoicism is that it's great in some ways because it's holding out to people. There are these principles that if you live by them, if you do the hard thing, if you kind of look at suffering a particular way, they can help you to grow. But ultimately, it's going to wind up disillusioning people because they're going to get to the end and it's not going to cash in. And the reason it's not going to cash in is because their own efforts apart from grace are going to fail.
Mm.
Going to fail.
Why do you think it's so popular?
I think it's popular perhaps for a lot of the reasons that people like Jordan Peterson are popular.
Yeah.
It's really challenging people to do the hard thing.
Yeah.
To not live a sedentary life, to overcome vices, to get rid of addictions, which are basically you allowing yourself to be controlled instead of mastering yourself. I think that people want to make sense of suffering in their life. They want ways to cope with a world they feel is out of their control. And since they don't have, you know, one of the things that Ryan Holiday mentions is that, that, you know, we don't have the toolbox to deal with it. Well, no, we threw away the toolbox because we have a secular culture and we've gotten rid of Christian belief. In fact, it's interesting.
What
is he
saying? We don't have the toolbox to
what? Yeah, to deal with all these issues that we're facing in our modern world. And I want to say, no, we threw out the toolbox.
Yeah.
We had the toolbox because Christianity has everything that Stoicism puts forth and a lot that Stoicism doesn't have, including the proper aim, right?
Yeah.
And so like you're saying, like it's not like a Pollyannish prosperity gospel. It's not like there's no such thing as real suffering or that suffering is now good, you know? And it's also, if you follow A, B, C, then your life is going to be fulfilled. You might get to the end of your life and still be having terrible suffering. So there's no sense of, okay, well, that's what the next life is for. You know, that there's no direction in that true north, so to speak. Now, what's also interesting about this, I think, is that I think you'd find if you did some research that men are particularly the ones, not that women aren't, but like men are very much the people who are attracted to this kind of idea, just like Jordan Peterson has a lot of male listeners. And I think that has to do with stuff we've talked about, you know, we've had conversations about this before, that men are without a real sense of purpose in our contemporary world. I mean, forget about the fact that we can't even define what a man or a woman is, right? Like then everything that we traditionally would have called masculine is either toxic or equally applicable to women, you know? So therefore women don't need men anymore, but men have also kind of lost their raison d'être, their reason for being.
It's a catch-22.
So like, I think that Stoicism appeals to men who want to do the hard thing, who want to master themselves, you know, men.
Because in a sense, women already have, in a very natural way, their ultimate goal in terms of what they were created for, naturally speaking. I'm not saying this is a blanket statement for all women, but childbirth, right? And so that's the heaviest load they could carry. So men want to find the heaviest load they can carry.
But here's the irony of our current society is that that's not enough for a woman these days. And that's unfortunate, I think, that it's not enough for women these days. They're told they have to be incredibly beautiful and fit, just like the model on the magazine, right? They're told they have to be incredibly educated, you know, masters, et cetera, high-powered job, working 80 hours a week, and also be mom.
Yep.
You know, like, and that winds up, by the way, not being fulfilling for them.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, on the other hand, you have men who are basically said, you're not really needed because society is telling the men, you shouldn't be the one going out and providing and protecting and doing that. She should be doing that just as much. And yeah, on the other hand, you should be doing the things that were typically female, and yet you also lose all the things that were men.
Yeah, and you're lame at the same time
because
you're not doing, you don't have a high-powered job or you're taking care of your kid.
Right.
I don't know.
You're a loser if you're on the couch.
Right.
And you're a loser if you're off the couch.
Yep.
You know, like, so it winds up being this difficulty, you know?
Yeah.
So here's just a final point. And this is about like masculinity in terms of what it ought to be. Again, we have to look to Jesus Christ, right? This is where real and authentic masculinity is found. We want to be men. Jesus was the perfect man. And what did he do? He sacrificed himself in a bloody way to save, right? That story, to sacrifice yourself, to even die, to save others, that's deeply rooted in the heart of a man, right? That's deeply rooted in the heart of a man. And I think it's why so much of the, we've been having this sort of surge in conversions. We've been seeing it a lot among men and a lot towards more traditional communities and even traditional worship, because the sacrificial aspects of the worship are clear. It's clear that this is about Jesus dying for us, being sacrificed for us so that we might live. And there's something when you experience that, that cries out to you, I need to do my sacrifice. I need to give my life. I need to do my part.
It's not only like it's some sort of ideal floating in the sky. It's someone who lived in history, and it's a real person.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And which, in him is where we find our ultimate fulfillment, in that person.
Yeah. Which is a step up from Stoicism.
Right.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. Very excellent. Great. All right. I think that's a wrap. We covered a lot.
We did.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
You got it.
See you guys next time. Like, share, subscribe, comment.
In addition to producing this podcast, Array of Hope is also known for producing events such as retreats, missions, conferences, and concerts. If you'd like to learn more about what we offer, just go to our website and click on Experience. There you can see and learn all the various programs that we offer. God bless you, and we hope to see you soon.